and put it all together. You're wearing Salvation Army uniforms? Did you join the Salvation Army? Very funny, Julia said, but she didn't look up. And why are you cutting up my sheet?
We bought the jackets today, Nick said. Cool, right? Wait, that's your sheet?
Julia set down the scissors. I don't think you want to know the answer. Ginger felt her cheeks flush. Julia was both wrong and right. She absolutely did want to know, but she also absolutely did not. Door stays open, she told Julia, or Nick goes home. She was back in the living room, eyes skimming over words in the magazine without taking them in, when Julia and Nick ran down the stairs and, without a word to her, retreated to the basement. When Ginger opened that door and brought down a load of laundry so small no one could be fooled into thinking it was worth washing, she found them sitting surrounded by toys. There was an American Girl doll, a doll suitcase, a doll cello, an old coffee can filled with markers, a decade of forgotten craft kits, modeling clay, glitter, string art. In the middle of it all was a garbage bag, which Julia seemed to be methodically filling with the remnants of her childhood. Ginger deposited the laundry basket on the washing machine and headed back upstairs. As she passed them, she saw they were texting and laughing. Were they texting each other about her? You have to help me out here, she told Richard later in bed, after she filled him in on what happened while he was at work. Can you come home early tomorrow? Talk to her, maybe? See if you can find out what's going on. She'll talk to you. Richard sighed.
Okay. He closed his eyes. I'll try.
He turned on his side, giving her his back.
But I really don't think it will help.
Chapter 7. The house letter arrived. 3 single-spaced pages of instructions. Beach towels would be provided. They needed to bring linens. Windows should be closed each time they left the house. Sudden storms could blow in without warning. The wooden pegs in the outdoor shower were coming loose. Never use them. Glory read that part twice. Outdoor shower. Imagine. As soon as the school year ended, Ginger's mother's helper hours were expanded. But the Clark kitchen was no longer a sanctuary because now, every day around lunchtime, Glory showed up, journal in hand, to find out everything Evelyn knew about Martha's Vineyard. Ginger didn't have to be asked to give up her seat at the kitchen counter. Her mother slipped onto her stool the second Ginger got off and the questions began. Which beaches have the best sunset? Which farm stand has the best fruit? Which church has the best lobster rolls? 1 week before departure day, Glory's planning ratcheted up, and Ginger's duties got a downgrade back to watching Thomas watch TV. As she reluctantly made her way to the Clark's den, she heard her mother ask, "What about secret places? Any places where famous people like to go? Like Lillian Hellman, for example?" Thomas turned up the TV, so Ginger never heard the answer to that one. But Thomas did explain the reason his Uncle Casper wasn't around. He'd already left for the vineyard. That's what the Clarks called it, the vineyard, or else the island, as if there was only one. He also explained that while Ginger's family was going up the following Friday, and his family was supposed to go up the day after that, there was a problem with his family going. What the problem was, he didn't say, and Ginger decided it was best not to ask. The day before they were supposed to leave, Glory marched into the Clark's kitchen, opened her journal, and showed Evelyn what was written inside. One word too big for Ginger to miss. Kaput, in the center of the page. Block letters colored in with a black Bic pushed down so hard the paper at the top of the T was torn. Ginger lingered on her way to the den, listening in. That's all he said. The plan is kaput. Can't get away. Trouble in Toyland.
Ginger could hear the curious tones of Evelyn's question, and then the sharp words of her mother's answer.
Beats me. First it was, a shipment went missing. Then it was, some big shot competitor went under, and the inventory is up for grabs. Whole thing smells like rotten fish.
At home that night, with Solly still at work, Glory served them an early dinner. 5 foil trays of Salisbury steak and buttered mashed potatoes, with a compartment of green beans, which they all, even Glory, passed over to get to the apple cobbler.
It's fine, she told them as she scraped out the last of the dessert from the ridges of the small square. We'll go without him. Don't give me those puppy eyes, she told Callie. He'll come when he can. Next weekend, I'm sure. Now go pack. Pack to blend in. Imagine the kind of person who has a beach house and bring that.
They cleared their tins and scattered to pick out clothes. While Charlie jammed t-shirts and shorts into a couple of sand buckets and then snuck out to hide the ant farm on the floor in the back seat of the car where Glory wouldn't see it, Ginger headed to the spidery storage side of the basement in search of a suitcase. She found Mimi down there, too, lugging a green monstrosity of a valise to the stairs.
Not that one, Ginger told her. Take something smaller. But we're supposed to blend in, right? Only what do they wear? Should I bring my skorts? My peasant blouses? My huaraches? I don't know. You don't know.
Glory came to the top of the stairs.
Girls, is something wrong?
And they both called up.
No.
Since she couldn't convince Mimi to pack light, Ginger evened things out by taking less herself. Although she had bought into the hope that her mother truly would be happier when they got to the rental house, there was no guarantee. Keeping things orderly and calm would at least improve the chances for a positive outcome. She took care of Callie's packing after she finished her own, grabbing what seemed a reasonable amount of clothes and squishing them in beside her in the small suitcase she picked because it wouldn't impose on the other luggage in the car. As it turned out, Glory didn't care who packed what. She also didn't care who left orange peels on the kitchen table, who asked for Bosco and didn't drink it, and who forgot to flush the toilet again. Even when Solly came home and immediately fell asleep in front of the TV, her good mood stuck firm. Departure day, it was rise and shine at the crack of dawn. Glory presented Solly with a buttered bialy toasted the way he liked it, nearly burnt, and kissed him noisily inches from his lips. Solly slid his arm around her torso and swept her into a dip and a spin.
Ah, Solly, she playfully pushed him away. You'll hurt your foot.
She got his hat, stuck it on his head, and opened the door.
Don't use up all the fun before I get there, he teased. Don't forget to leave me the number. Don't forget to call as soon as you're in the house so I can hear how nothing went wrong on the way. You're a good driver, he added quickly. But the other drivers, I'm not so sure.
I'll leave the number. But if I don't call soon as we get there, it might be because the phone isn't turned on yet. Don't give yourself agita, she told Solly, who'd stopped halfway out the door. The house letter said the phone's been off, but they're turning it on for the season today. It just didn't say what time.
And if they forget? Solly asked.
Always with the worst. In that ridiculous scenario, you'll hear from me tomorrow when Evelyn comes. Her house is close, just past the dump and around the bend. Happy?
You call, I'll be happy.
He gave kisses, top of the head, to each of the children, and then little kisses to Glory. One time so close they banged teeth, which made them both laugh. They all watched as he trudged up the block to the train. As soon as he turned the corner, Glory clapped her hands.
Chip-chop! Put the suitcases in the car while I change.
She was zipping up her dress when she came outside.
What do you think?
She twirled around to show it off.
Darling, right?
The dress was new, blue, crocheted, and short. To Ginger, it looked like a poor choice for a long drive, but she nodded along with everyone else, doing her best to look convincing. Glory hustled them into the car and then announced she had to scoot over to Evelyn's to get some last-minute instructions.
As soon as she disappeared into the Clark house, Mimi began complaining.
It's hot in the car. I'm going to die from heat.
Callie turned to Charlie.
Can you die from heat?
You can die from anything.
I'm half dead,
Mimi said. Charlie got out and started digging in the dirt.
I'm three quarters dead,
she said, and Callie got out to help him.
I'm 9,999% dead.
She lay down across the seat. Ginger saw the Clark's front door crack open.
Get up!
She leaned out the window and called.
Get in!
She took in the signs of her mother's mood change. Shoulders hunched, eyes to the ground.
Sit up!
She hissed. And this time, Mimi listened. By the time Glory got in the car, they were all sitting, hands neatly folded in laps. She gazed out the window.
Well,
she rubbed her temples.
How do you like them apples?
What apples? Mimi asked. What happened?
What happened is Paul Clark moved out last night. No warning. What do you think about that?
Ginger didn't know what to think.
Which means Evelyn's not going to Martha's Vineyard tomorrow. And Casper. Well, what do you think he's going to do once he hears his sister's home, alone, abandoned?
Again, no idea.
Are they getting divorced?
Mimi asked. She sounded dangerously cheerful.
I don't want to get divorced, Callie added quietly.
Good God, children don't get divorced. Callie, are those tears? You know tears are not for the car. Tears are for the privacy of your room with the door closed and the shades drawn.
We have blinds,
Mimi pointed out. Glory, talking over her, didn't hear.
There's plenty worse things in the world than divorce.
She looked in the rearview mirror.
Like having a bunch of glumsters stare at the back of your neck all day, for example.
They quickly rearranged their mouths into smiles that wouldn't fool a dog.
We can stay home,
Ginger tried to sound cheery.
There's fun things to do at home.
I'd give that a 2,
Glory told her.
On second thought, a 1-.
You got to put feeling in your eyes. That's what good acting is about. If you feel it in your eyes, people will buy it's true.
Mimi opened the back door.
Come on, let's go hide behind the couch until Daddy comes home. Then when he walks in, we can all jump up and yell, "Surprise! We're still here!"
Close that door right now.
Glory turned on the engine. Hearing about Solly seemed to have decided things.
We're going on vacation.
The car bucked as she shifted to reverse.
And we're going to have fun. Loads and loads of fun. Agreed?
Her brood of bobbleheads nodded vigorously. Suitcases and sand buckets blocked the back window, but that didn't stop Glory from accelerating down the driveway. She slowed briefly as she pulled out onto the street, sped up again to the corner, slowed as she made the turn, and continued, herky-jerky, to the highway. The sea was calm, the sky was clear, the boat was big, the crossing smooth. Ginger felt sick.
You got your father's stomach.
Glory rooted around in her purse, dug out a packet of Ritz, and handed them over.
Don't inhale them. Nibble.
She opened her journal and turned to the sea. The crackers made Ginger queasier, so timing it with one of Glory's languorous blinks, she snuck them to Charlie, who raced with Callie to the other side of the deck to feed the gulls. Mimi tugged at Ginger's sweater.
Want to play spit? Want to play spite and malice?
Ginger didn't want to play anything. So Mimi sat on the deck and took out her jacks. But something about this, the thump of the ball or the sweep of her hand, was annoying Glory. Ginger felt the heat of her mother's irritation seep into the air. Her journal banged shut.
Even here, sitting in the middle of the ocean, I still can't get a...
Without waiting to hear the rest, Mimi ran off in search of her brother. Glory closed her eyes, and Ginger watched as her mother's slender fingers danced over to her gauzy kerchief, tucking in runaway strands of her honey-kissed hair. Her hand moved to her cheeks, then her neck, then her mouth. Ginger wondered what she was checking for, and then what she was smelling that made her nostrils flare. Her subject swiveled, polarized sunglasses pointing at her.
For God's sake, there must be something you can do.
She joined Charlie and her sisters, and they all watched the gulls swoop and hover, hoping for more crackers. The boat glided through calm water. The sun painted freckles on their cheeks. The ferry turned, and Charlie pointed to the dock. In the distance, people were waiting, as if for their arrival. Then Glory was behind them.
Everybody wave!
She raised her arm and drew a slow arc back and forth through the air.
See anyone waiting to surprise us? Come on, wave! Who wants to be the best waver?
Competition between the siblings never ended well. Within moments, Callie tried to get closer to the railing, and Mimi yelled, "Stop it!" and shoved her. Ginger was about to intervene, but Glory beat her to it, her hand clamping tight around Mimi's wrist. Mimi made her legs go limp, feet dragging as her mother pulled her out of sight. When a woman in a broad-brimmed hat hurried over to ask if everything was all right, Ginger didn't hesitate.
My sister gets seasick. If she doesn't get to the bathroom in time, she'll throw up all over the deck. One time when she did that, the smell was so bad the rest of us threw up too.
The woman gave a weak smile and withdrew. Like statues waiting to be brought back to life, they stayed where they were even after the boat bumped the dock with a jolt. They heard her before they saw her, Glory rising out of the stairwell like a goblin.
Hurry up, Chip Chop! You're holding up the works!
On the vehicle deck, no one spoke, not even when Glory hurried them past their car for the second time.
Good Lord, someone stole it!
Mimi pointed.
It's right there.
She slid in first, cheeks still burning red. Callie got in next, but she kept a distance in case what happened to Mimi was catching. Charlie scooted in last, leaving Ginger no choice but her usual punishment, the front. Glory handed her a piece of paper.
Directions. You okay?
Course you are. She brushed Ginger's hair out of her eyes.
Listen, kiddo.
Her fingertips, moving quickly, felt light as butterfly wings.
You're my peach, you know that? My little bruised peach.
She turned on a dazzling smile and drove off the boat ramp onto the island of her dreams. Chapter 8. The November incident, Julia's Thanksgiving rebellion, had a rehearsed feel about it that Ginger only noticed after it was over, when she and Richard were in the car on the way to Glory's. It was then, as she replayed their declarations in her head, that she realized Julia and Nick had taken turns talking, like characters in a play where the playwright decided to make all the dialogue of equal length. She imagined Nick timing it with his phone. Julia went first.
Nick's mom isn't making Thanksgiving this year. She went to Texas.
To visit my Uncle Brian. He's my mom's brother, and he's kind of sick.
That's why she went. That's why I'm staying here, so Nick's not alone.
When they seemed finished with their explanation, Ginger told them she was very sorry to hear about Nick's uncle, but she didn't understand why that meant Julia wasn't coming to Thanksgiving.
I don't even like turkey, Julia said, as if that made a difference.
Ginger offered the obvious solution.
Nick doesn't have to be alone. Bring him with you. Grandma won't care. You can come, she told the boy.
They were in the living room, Nick and Julia squashed close together on the sofa, as if they wished they were one person. Nick, tall and gangly, knees rising high in front of him, fiddled with the small silver hoop at the edge of his unruly eyebrow. Ginger thought the hoop hole looked early-stage infected. She considered offering to check it out, but Nick interrupted her thoughts.
Honestly, he smirked and shook his head. Your invitation? Doesn't sound like you mean it.
Emboldened, Julia stood her ground. We're not going. Why do you even care? Thanksgiving in our family is a total fraud.
What does that mean?
This was not the first time Ginger noticed it. That when Julia was with Nick, it sometimes felt like they were speaking a language she didn't understand. She glanced at Richard, who shot her a back-off look. Registered and ignored.
How is it a fraud?
Julia used her fingers to count off the infractions.
No one ever says the truth. No one talks about anything real. No one wants to be there. Aunt Mimi's whole family hates it. Wallace told me when they go to their other grandmas, they don't sit doing nothing all day. They can be on their phones or go outside. They can go on the roof if they want. It isn't so snobby and strict.
Describing a meal at Glory's as snobby was so off base it wasn't worth addressing. But the roof?
Have you gone up on the roof?
Richard shot her another unappreciated warning look.
That's not the point, Julia said.
Ginger nodded. The point was that the Pupkins were more fun. She wouldn't argue. This was partly a matter of numbers. Mimi's husband, Neil Pupkin, was one of six siblings, all of whom had procreated prodigiously. Because of this, Mimi's three boys, a dainty brood by Pupkin standards, had 20 cousins, or maybe now it was up to 25. The extended family included not just grandparents, cousins, aunts, and uncles, but great-aunts, second cousins, first cousins once removed. There seemed to be enough of them to make their own country. The country of Pupkin. Ginger believed, and Richard agreed. This was what attracted Mimi to Neil in the first place. He came with the protective shield of a clan. Of course, Mimi would deny it. She was, or pretended to be, unaware of the benefit the chaos of the Pupkin clan afforded her. Instead, she complained about how her house was always overfull. And given the size of her house, this was no small feat. Richard referred to the place as the Clue House, because it boasted a study, a library, and a billiard room. There was also a solarium, a media room, a dedicated closet for Neil's fly-fishing equipment, and a carriage house out back, which Mimi was currently using as a studio, now that she was an artist. Quilts were her current thing. Before she started quilting, she'd been a real estate agent. Prior to that, she owned a children's furniture store. She'd also sold organic cosmetics and ran a small food cooperative. This was in addition to her volunteer work, heading up all the boys' booster clubs, spearheading the skate park, forming a committee to get rid of the geese in the pond near her house, and fighting to extend the hours of the public library. By now, Ginger was used to the fact that none of her sister's pursuits lasted very long. Something was always wrong with them, eventually. It had been the same in college. Like a real-life Goldilocks, Mimi cycled through a big state school, a medium-sized university, and a small liberal arts college, transferring her way to her bachelor's. After that, there was half a year of a master's in linguistics, 2 months of landscape architecture, and 5 days of a 3-year midwifery program. The problem with midwifery was too many bodily fluids, plus night work. As to how many infected tonsils and swollen adenoids Neil and ENT had to cure to support a house like theirs, Ginger had no idea, but she assumed it was a lot. Her own house was closer in size to the home they'd grown up in. Cozy, in her words. Or as Mimi would describe it, about 1,000 square feet short of quaint. But no matter how big it was, Mimi's house was not big enough to handle the demands of the Pupkin clan. Every relative, Ginger's tiny family included, knew that the spare key was under the green watering can at the back door. There was an alarm system that was never used because the house was never unattended. Describing her lack of alone time was almost a sport for Mimi. Her weekends were jammed with mandatory family get-togethers, and weeknights booked because no Pupkin could have a birthday without a full complaint of relatives coming over for coffee and cake. And it wasn't just birthdays. There was always an occasion to mark. An anniversary, a graduation, a hiring, a firing, someone sick, someone sad. It was brilliant, really. With three boys and a job that changed so frequently, Ginger struggled to keep up. The Popkins were the final impenetrable layer of Mimi's hazmat suit. A tornado of activity protecting her from all undesirable parts of life, otherwise known as glory. Julia's observation, that Thanksgiving at Glory's wasn't fun, was a fair one. Ginger now regretted not trying harder to convince Glory it was time that she and Richard host it for a change. But her mother had been adamant. Thanksgiving, she insisted, was her holiday.
How about I organize some games? Ginger proposed to Julia. The library is running a digital scavenger hunt. We could form teams. We can join online right now.
Julia rolled her eyes.
Okay, how about charades? That would be fun. And if you're on Grandma Glory's team, you're guaranteed to win.
Her daughter let out an airy whoosh.
A scavenger hunt or charades? Really? Okay, forget a game. Just come. If you want to go outside, go outside. Grandma won't care. She probably won't even notice. Going outside is not a problem.
It's not a problem because we are not going. Emphasis communicated. Julia's position was clear.
Sorry, Jules. You have to come. Not coming is not an option.
But apparently it was. Chapter 9. Glory leaned closer to the steering wheel.
Make a left where? And don't mumble. Project.
According to her, navigator mumbling was the reason she'd overshot the last two turns. This time, Ginger shouted out the instructions.
Make a left where the road splits. Over there.
Glory scowled, but made the left.
I said project. Not scream, project and enunciate.
Ginger corrected her volume and enunciated. Turn right after the clam shack.
The what?
Glory scanned the unfamiliar landscape. Mimi tapped her shoulder.
That thing.
She pointed to a small gray shingled building where a long line of customers snaked to the parking lot.
A little notice would be nice next time.
As Glory made the turn, the cars behind her honked. But she drove blithely on, past low stone walls surrounding meadows where sheep and horses grazed, as oblivious to her as she was to them. Mimi leaned forward and jabbed Ginger in the arm every time she noticed something good. A pond with swans, a sign for afternoon pony rides, an honor farm selling sunflowers. In the far distance, Ginger made out the soft line where the horizon met the sea. The road zigzagged inland. The car coasted beneath a canopy of leaves, tree limbs wrinkled like alligator skin. Glory slowed.
What next?
Ginger enunciated.
Go past the store with the blue rowboat in front and turn right after the climbing tree. That's what it says. Right after the climbing tree? No street name?
No. This answer seemed wrong, so Ginger tried another.
Yes?
Behind them, traffic compressed. A pickup truck, a delivery van, a Volkswagen bus. As if the cars were now trying to nudge them along. Mimi pointed.
There it is.
Glory turned to look. The car swerved. More horns blared.
For crying out loud!
To avoid getting hit, Glory pulled into a snarl of bushes on the narrow shoulder and stopped. A branch poked through Ginger's window. Vehicles whizzed by, kicking up pebbles and blowing in a punishment of dust.
Let me see that!
She grabbed the directions. When she finished reading, she let the paper flutter to her lap. This time, she stopped traffic in both directions as she pulled onto the road with a careful 7-point turn. The sign for Fisher's Hollow was etched into a small piece of wood, the letters painted a faded green.
Excited?
Glory asked as she turned onto the road. The car dipped in and out of a rut. Ginger closed her eyes against the smells of manure, hay, lilies, and skunk. They lurched to a stop.
Well, what do you think?
The house was mostly hidden by a thicket of trees, but Charlie gave a two-finger whistle of approval anyway, which Callie and Mimi seconded with applause. Glory turned to Ginger.
What's the matter, Your Majesty? Not up to your standards?
Because of the trees, Ginger couldn't make out much. The house was gray and weathered-looking. There were two round windows upstairs and a roof that looked like moss was growing out of it. None of this seemed right to mention.
It's beautiful, she said,
and her mother smiled. As they lugged their suitcases over the path of crushed shells, past a parched flower garden, Glory picked out what she wanted to see.
Oh, beech plums! And those flowers with the umbrella petals? Those are ladies' slippers. Evelyn told me ladies' slippers are murder to grow, but around here they thrive like nobody's business.
She rustled around in her purse for a key. Mimi skipped ahead and tried the door.
Open!
She glanced down the hill.
What's that?
She ran off to investigate a large shed in a patch of trees. Charlie and Callie ran after her. This left Ginger to follow her mother into the house, where she hoped her skills as an early warning system could help determine how the rest of their day would go.
Houses here can be very warty,
Glory said as they toured through the rabbit warren of rooms on the first floor.
Evelyn told me people add on pell-mell whenever they can. Even a house that looks small from the outside can turn out to have wings.
Compared to their house at home, Ginger thought this house seemed big. But she kept her thoughts to herself. She really didn't know much about houses. Her mother stopped to take in the figurehead of a mermaid that was nailed above the entrance to the kitchen. Ginger was thinking the mermaid looked sad when Glory pronounced it, "Darling." Apparently, Ginger didn't know much about mermaids either. According to Glory, there was a lot that was darling. The roses on the trellis visible through the kitchen window. The sea chest moonlighting as a coffee table in the living room. The blue glass bottles in the corner cabinet of the dining room, no two alike. And most darling of all, the master suite at the back of the house.
Oh, a California king.
Glory bounced on the bed and kicked off her sandals.
White carpet?
She dug her toes in the thick plush and nodded toward the drapes.
Let's see the view.
Ginger pulled the drape cord, and like Carol Merrill on Let's Make a Deal, revealed picture windows and a sliding door. Also revealed, outside, was Charlie digging a hole with his hands, Mimi raining dirt over his head, and Callie twirling as fast as she could. Ginger struggled to pull the drapes closed, but the cord was stuck. Mimi saw her, and though no sound permeated the glass, Ginger could hear her scream a warning. One more tug and the drapes closed. Ginger swung around, ready to defend her ill-behaved siblings, but Glory had seen none of it. Her mother was at the vanity now, swiveling on a stool as she adjusted the three-way mirror.
The back of my head.
Glory moved the mirrors to get a better view.
Imagine.
She watched as her fingers fluffed up her hair.
It's like someone saw my dream and made it real.
The tour ended in the kitchen when Glory tried the phone.
Dead.
She slammed the receiver down.
Your father is going to have a conniption. What am I supposed to do now?
It was not a question that needed an answer. It was a statement that Ginger understood meant the good mood portion of their first day was now over. Charged by her mother with assigning rooms, Ginger corralled everyone inside. Since this house had no bunk beds, she put Callie and Charlie together in one room and Mimi with her in the other. To keep the calm, she let Mimi have the bed her sister decided was better. But even with the better bed, Mimi was not calm, Within a minute, the vertical blinds were cockeyed, the wooden knob from the dresser drawer was under the bed, and the wall had fallen victim to the spindle chair, which went careening after Mimi experimented with how many times she could turn it in a circle before falling. Ginger ran her fingers over the dented molding while a chastened Mimi pleaded, "Please don't tell. I didn't mean to." A begrudging agreement was made. Mimi would lie still as a corpse in bed while Ginger made things right. She repositioned the chair so the back of it blocked the molding and untangled the cord so the blinds hung straight. But as she was jamming the dresser knob in place, they heard familiar footsteps. Mimi didn't ask for permission. She darted across the room and threw her weight against the door.
"Don't come in. We're changing into bathing suits." "For crying out loud. I'm your mother. What am I going to see I haven't seen before? And why are you changing into bathing suits? We're going to the grocery store."
She gave up and moved to the next room. How did that ant farm get here? Mimi skipped downstairs to report the news break that Ginger's suit no longer fit.
"Ripped,"
Ginger heard her sister tell her mother.
"Exploded."
She returned with two safety pins and a message.
"You're supposed to hurry up. We have to go."
After Ginger finished pinning her suit together, she headed to the living room. She was in the front hall when she noticed the long tube tied with a red ribbon leaning against the wall next to the door. Attached was an envelope with her mother's name on it. She handed it over.
"I guess we missed this when we came in."
Glory looked at it and beamed.
"I thought there might be a surprise around here somewhere."
She pulled off the ribbon and unrolled the scroll.
"How darling, a map."
Charlie took the map and laid it on the captain's chest in the living room.
"It's a treasure map."
His nail-bitten finger followed a thick black line across the yellowed paper.
"This must be the treasure."
He tapped a roughly drawn X.
"Careful," he told Mimi when she squatted next to him. "It's old. It could rip."
Glory finished reading her note and slipped it back in the envelope.
"It is a treasure map. An old map to a secret beach. Compliments of Caspar Diggins."
Mimi took a sniff.
"Not old. Painted to look old with tea. We did the same thing for Document Day. Wrote up class laws, then painted it with Lipton's."
She touched the map.
"Still wet,"
she sniffed again.
"Maybe it's coffee. What do you think, coffee or tea?"
"Okay, that's enough."
Glory reclaimed the map and put it on the kitchen counter to dry.
"The main thing is it's a map to a beach where we're going tomorrow. Now, am I the only one around here who wants ice cream?"
"Are the groceries going to deliver themselves?"
This time, not having proper directions was no problem at all. Driving along country roads with the windows open and the ocean breeze wafting in was all part of Glory's dream come true. Soon everyone fell into a woozy silence. By the time the car bucked up over the curb of the parking lot of their first stop, the ice cream stand, all the backseaters were asleep or faking it. Glory squeezed the car into a spot next to an old red school bus, the words "Camp Jabberwocky" painted in cheerful script on the side. The bus was disgorging the last of a crew of campers. Some moved awkwardly, legs in braces. Others waited to be helped into wheelchairs.
"Good grief," Glory muttered. "This is going to take forever. Be a peach, Gingy. Wake everyone up while I get online."
Ginger watched as her mother tried to scoot around a counselor who was struggling to give a teenage boy, legs hanging limp, a piggyback ride to the ice cream stand.
"Excuse me," Glory said. "Coming through."
The counselor, a stocky woman who looked to be in her 20s, turned around, wobbling as she did. The boy, hands around her neck, grabbed tighter. Both of them seemed to find this hilarious. Glory stepped back to avoid a collision while the counselor steadied herself.
"Maybe it would be easier if I just went and bought you your ice cream,"
Glory offered, sweet voice on.
"I have a carload of kids with a bunch of free hands. They can bring ice cream back for everyone.
She winked and whispered,
That way you can put him down.
The teenager yelled out,
No way!
The counselor laughed and said,
You mean no way, thank you.
We like to do things ourselves, she told Glory.
Ready?
She asked her passenger.
Yes, please,
he answered. And both the counselor and the boy laughed again. Glory smiled to seem good-natured and sped past them to get online. By the time Ginger and her siblings joined her, she was chatting with an old man about the weather.
If rain makes your bones hurt, why in the world would you pray for it?
A little pain in the knee is no big deal. The island needs the rain. I pray for rain every night, but every morning I wake up to the same blazing sun.
Cuckoo bird,
Glory muttered under her breath as she took her place at the Order Here window. When they got back to the car, a young girl waiting to board the bus held up her ice cream cone and boasted,
I got this because I used the bathroom by myself.
Cuckoo bird,
Glory said again, and slid behind the wheel. There were more weather complaints at the grocery store. People in the aisles remarking about how parched the island was, how the beach sand had turned fine as dust, how the ponds were shallower than anyone's grandmother could remember.
Wish I knew a rain dance,
a woman said as they got online to check out.
I can do a rain dance.
Callie moved into the aisle and did an imitation of a ballerina.
Hold on, beauty queen, Glory said. If it starts raining because of you, I will not be
so bad-tempered.
Glory swung around to face her scolders, two bird-like women standing close together on line behind them. Ginger tugged her mother's arm.
Not you. They're not talking about you.
The cashier agreed.
She's right, hon. They're talking about Miss Hellman. You know the playwright?
She leaned closer. Tina over there, in the blue hat, works for her, part-time. Types her private correspondence and makes lunch. Woman asks for the same thing every day, and every day complains she doesn't like it. I don't know how Tina works for that dragon.
Really?
Glory's eyes widened.
I think Tina is the luckiest duck in the world.
Tina, checking out in the aisle next to theirs, kept her eyes cast down as Glory leaned over to peer in her cart.
Lillian Hellman likes cornflakes. So do I. Gingy, be a peach and grab a box. I forgot to get one. Ask that man to show you where the cereal is.
She nodded toward a clerk replenishing a display of corn right next to where Ginger stood.
He won't hear her, the cashier said. Tap him on the shoulder, hon. Then point to me.
Ginger tapped, pointed, and watched as the cashier used sign language to talk to the man. He listened, nodded, and motioned for Ginger to follow him. As she walked away, she heard her mother ask,
They hired a deaf man? That's so nice. Did he teach you to sign?
He didn't have to. Lots of us sign. Lots of deaf people on the island. We all just kind of pick it up. Comes in handy, too. I have conversations in sign language with hearing people all the time. Great for telling secrets. If you signed, I'd tell you one now.
Imagine, Glory said.
By the time Ginger got back with the cereal, the conversation about deaf people and weather was over. And Glory had softened up Tina enough to confirm that Miss Hellman was on the island and guests were expected for the weekend.
Is it Arthur Miller? Is Arthur Miller coming? I should warn you. I might faint if he is.
Glory's eyes were shining bright.
Let me ask you, Tina. If a person wanted to bump into Miss Hellman, an admirer like me, I wouldn't bother her, of course. Maybe a compliment, but that would be it. Where would you suggest I go?
But Tina was done talking. She snapped her purse shut and hurried out of the store. The cashier handed Glory her change.
I seen Miss Hellman around a couple of places.
One's up in Menemsha. One's down the road from Jungle Beach.
Glory took a quick breath.
Really? That's where we're going tomorrow. Jungle Beach.
Charlie snapped out of his supermarket stupor. There's a jungle here? The cashier shrugged.
Jungle of hippies. Flower power good for nothings. Ask me, we should load them and their truck on the ferry and ship them off the island for good. No jobs, no rules, no manners, no clothes.
Why don't they have clothes?
Mimi asked on their way to the car.
Another cuckoo bird, Glory said, but this time she didn't sound so sure.
Dinner was hot dogs and buttered corn, which they ate outside at a splintery picnic table under a pergola covered with flowering vines that were magnets for cartoon-sized bees. The bees touched down on the corn, moved to the rounds of tomatoes, and got stuck in the seeds of the sliced cucumbers. Charlie put himself in charge of batting them away, and Ginger cleaned up after him while Glory ducked inside at ever-shortening intervals to see if the phone was working yet. Finally, a cheer.
Hallelujah! Dial tone!
Out on the deck, Ginger could hear her mother's side of the conversation.
For God's sake, Solly, why are you in bed worrying? Of course I'm fine. Everybody's fine. Why wouldn't we be fine?
There was a long pause, and then,
I don't know. What more do you want me to say?
Glory hung up, marched out, and gave Ginger instructions.
I'm calling Evelyn. You're in charge. Do not let anyone wander off, or climb any trees, or eat any of the berries from any of the bushes. If anyone goes to the pond, you have my permission to slap them.
What pond? Mimi asked as soon as the screen door closed. This time, Glory seemed to be mostly listening, and when she spoke, her voice was so low Ginger had to strain to hear.
Paul said what? How awful. Where will Thomas go? He's welcome to stay with us.
There was a long silence, and then Glory's tone changed.
Why would I be offended? It makes perfect sense.
The silence lengthened. Ginger stopped listening. When the screen door reopened, her mother was holding a glass and her eyes were twinkling and damp.
Guess who's on his way? Little Thomas Clark, coming by himself to stay with his Uncle Casper for a whole month.
She shook her glass and watched the ice cubes clink.
Woman is out of her bird.
She sat down at the picnic table and closed her eyes. Ginger could hear the sound of Mimi and Charlie arguing down by the shed. She watched as her mother's fingers slid to her temples.
I'll take them inside,
she offered, and ran to tell her siblings it was time to go in and play board games.
First one in gets to pick.
She raced them to the house and then waited, so she was the last one in. As she passed her mother, Glory blew her a kiss. Although there were a lot of games in the house, there was nothing they could actually play. Mimi's first choice, Monopoly, had no dice. The Ouija board had no pusher. In Clue, all the weapons were gone. When Glory finally joined them, Charlie was fiddling with the TV antenna, but that proved useless too. Glory took one look at the snowy picture on the screen and sighed her way out of the room. When she came back, there was a slim phone book in her hand. She sat down and flipped lazily through the pages, as if it were a magazine.
What are we going to do now?
Mimi wanted to know. Glory didn't look up.
I haven't the foggiest idea.
Time for bed? Ginger suggested. Her siblings clambered up the stairs, eager to get to their rooms before their mother stopped them. Unlike Ginger, they hadn't noticed Glory had lost interest in them. From what Ginger could tell, her mother didn't care one way or another whether they were there or whether they were gone. Chapter 10. Ginger rang Glory's doorbell and tried to give one more go at positive thinking. But this time, all she could come up with were pipe dreams. Julia and Nick were kidding and would show up any minute. Glory forgot to tell them this year she was going to the Pupkins for Thanksgiving instead. Maybe it wasn't really Thanksgiving at all. The door swung open, and her pipe dreams died.
Finally!
It was Mimi.
They're here!
She called into the living room. After obligatory kisses on cheeks, Ginger shared the news that Julia was under the weather and not coming. There were mild noises of concern, and then everyone went back to what they were doing before Ginger and Richard had arrived. Recoiling from a platter Glory was offering around the room, deviled eggs with yolks crusted over like warnings.
"Want one?"
Glory offered an egg to Richard, but he declined.
"What? Are you all on the same cockamamie diet? Have an egg,"
she told Ginger.
"You look pale."
Across the room, Mimi sent a signal to her sons, her thumb and forefinger together, moving zip in a straight line through the air. The boys understood. "Time to turn off your devices." They shut down their electronics and let their mother herd them out of the living room. As with all holidays, the meal at Glory's was only a first stop for the Pupkins. As soon as the main course was over, sometimes directly after it was served, Mimi would apologize and then hustle her family out for the next dinner at Neil's mother's house. The fun dinner, Ginger now knew, where the boys were allowed on the roof. As soon as she walked into the dining room, Ginger stopped.
What happened to the table?
Her mother's table, when opened, could comfortably fit 18. But today it was closed to its smallest size, cozy for a family of six. The plates, she saw, teetered one on top the other. Napkins had been tossed helter-skelter. The centerpiece was an untidy jumble of silverware.
"I ran out," Glory said.
"Of what?" Ginger asked. Neil knocked on the table and chuckled.
"Might be a little tight here, Glor."
Neil was a husky man who liked big things. Oversized sofas, large cars, prominent noses.
"How about we open this baby up? Where do you store the leaves?"
"Used to keep them in the closet till they were stolen. Imagine."
Of course, later, Ginger realized, she should have questioned why Glory would think someone would break into a house to steal the leaves of a dining room table. But in the moment, she wasn't on the lookout for signs of a diminishing mind. Her attention was turned inward, to unclenching her jaw and bringing her shoulders down from her ears, now that Glory and Mimi had moved on, without interrogating her further about the details of Julia's health. Eager to get going, the Pupkins quickly squeezed around the table, Neil taking the seat at the foot, Glory in her usual place at the head. This left Ginger and Richard, who'd hesitated, to sit slightly exiled, half a foot from the table, plates balanced on their thighs. Sitting close to the buffet, Ginger could see Glory's cuisine had reached a new low. Overcooked asparagus dripped off the rim of a platter like clocks in a Dalí painting. And wasn't that the platter Ginger had tested for lead paint? There had been a bunch of them, serving dishes Glory picked up for practically nothing at garage sales. And to finally settle the argument over whether they were safe for use, Ginger had brought over a lead paint test kit. She was sure the asparagus platter was one of many that had failed. The large bowl beside it hadn't failed, but what was in it looked inedible. Breakfast sausages. Possibly cold. Next to that was a casserole of stuffing that looked like a science experiment about dehydrated food.
"Oops," Glory called out. "Forgot the gravy."
She disappeared into the kitchen. Mimi swiveled to her sons to give a rush of instructions.
"Just take a taste. You'll eat for real at Granny's, and don't use the gravy, and don't eat the sausages. Anything tastes bad, just spit it in your napkin when Grandma looks away."
"And stay away from that asparagus fish," Ginger said. I mean asparagus dish.
Glory swept back in, holding a bowl of cranberries and an open can of gravy.
Now we can start.
She stood behind her chair.
Who wants to say face?
Grace,
Ginger corrected her.
Thank you.
Glory passed the cranberries to Troy, Mimi's youngest.
Try these. You'll love them. They're darling.
Troy put a cranberry in his mouth and turned to his mother.
These are really hard.
Mimi picked one up and examined it.
Did you forget to cook the cranberries?
Why would I do that?
Glory turned to Troy.
They're not really hard, she told him.
They're really hard. Can you say really?
She turned to Mimi.
I'll never understand why you insist on paying a stranger to help him when I could do it better for free.
See what you started?
Mimi said to Ginger under her breath.
Ginger knew Mimi was still mad at her for pointing out Troy's speech impediment in front of their mother. His problem wasn't the usual tangle-mangling, which Glory and her sisters all had to a degree, though Mimi, through force of will, had pretty much managed to get over it. And Ginger only slipped up occasionally, usually after her mother got under her skin. Troy's problem was more run-of-the-mill, certain letters in certain combinations. Not surprisingly, Mimi had ignored Ginger's recommendations for a speech pathologist, opting instead for a doctor who'd written the definitive book on articulation disorders. No matter that the woman's office was on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, or that her only open time slot meant Troy would have to miss most of band practice twice a week. Getting Troy out of mandatory band practice was a small potatoes problem for Mimi. That Troy would have to slink out of the practice room early while children made fun of his speech behind his back was not on her worry list. Unlike Ginger, Mimi did not have a worry list. The worst part for Mimi was dealing with this. Glory grousing about why she wasn't asked to help.
I don't get why you schlep him into the city to see that woman, Glory complained. All he needs to do is sing. Singing is the best cure. Troy, sing with Grandma. There once was a boy in the North Country. He had... Come on, Troy, sing with me. He had sisters.
No singing, Mimi snapped. And that woman is a doctor.
Oh, a doctor,
Glory shrugged.
Troy doesn't need a doctor.
He needs an actress who can project and enunciate and sing.
You know, she told Troy, before you were born, I used to sing and dance. I was quite the actress.
Good grief, Mimi said.
You were in a community theater group 50 years ago. Since when does talent have an expiration date? Anyway, didn't I go on tour last year?
Yes, Mimi nodded. You toured all the best nursing homes in northern New Jersey.
She turned to Neil.
What time do we have to be at your mom's?
Neil was an excellent ear doctor, but he rarely listened.
Hmm?
Glory grabbed hold of Troy's wrist.
I'm going to tell you a story.
Like everyone else in the family, the boys knew this one by heart.
There was a woman in my theater group named Shirley Gewurz.
Hunter, Mimi's middle boy, started lip-syncing along until Mimi shot him a warning look and he stopped.
Not very good. Nothing to look at. Never got the leads. One day, changed her name to Sunny Worth. Sent out her headshots, got hired for television.
She snapped her fingers.
Like that. That's how good we were. Imagine.
Shirley Gewurz did one commercial.
Mimi didn't notice that Hunter was now lip-syncing her words. For Lavoris, that's it. Her entire acting career. Halitosis.
Not one of my problems.
Glory stood up. The discussion was over. She fetched the gravy can and raised it.
Time for a toast. Isn't this darling? All of us here together.
We're not all here.
Ginger immediately regretted having spoken.
What I mean is, just because Julia is homesick doesn't mean we should forget her.
No one's forgetting her, Richard said quietly.
Gingy's right, Glory said. I forgot about Julia.
I forget all the time now, I swear.